The church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
We think a lot about religious freedom here in the United States, and of course, there is a threat to it. It's largely theoretical. It's largely a threat that is in the idea stage. People talking about religious freedom in derogatory terms. They're talking about religious people in derogatory terms. And it raises one's awareness. Perhaps sometimes it verges on paranoia. Not to diminish that in any way, but religious freedom is a scarcity in the world globally. The United States, we enjoy religious freedom unlike many people, most people in the world. If you count the world simply by its population, religious freedom is very scarce commodity indeed. There are places like China or the Islamic world, which covers many, many countries, almost entire continents, where religious freedom consists of, well, you're a Muslim or you're not. And if you're not, you are not just a second-class citizen. You might end up in prison or worse. We're going to talk about international religious freedom. The State Department has recently issued its annual report. Welcome back to Issues Etc. live on this Tuesday afternoon, the 29th of August. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Nina Shea is going to join us from the Hudson Institute Center for Religious Freedom. And then a little later in this hour, Pastor Tom Baker joins us to teach a Sunday school lesson. We'll be looking at the wisdom of Solomon in 1 Kings chapter 3. Feel free to join us with questions or comments, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet @issuesetc, or the comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the State Department's recent annual report on international religious freedom, Nina Shea, an international human rights lawyer for more than 30 years and director of the Hudson Institute's Center for Religious Freedom. Nina, welcome to Issues Etc.
Great to be with you, Todd. Thank you.
Are there sociological factors that contribute to or in some way determine where a country stands on religious freedom for its citizens?
Well, I think that country that doesn't have any experience of freedom or has very little freedom of expression or freedom of association, will have very little religious freedom. So in that sense, yes. I mean, it doesn't matter how wealthy a country is or how developed a country is or whether it's what part of the world it's in or even what the religious background or lack of religion is. It's basically freedom and an openness to different ideas.
This U.S. State Department report, what purpose does it serve with respect to the United States? Why does the United States gather this information?
Well, the United States gathers this information because Congress mandated it and under the International Religious Freedom Act. But there is a feeling and a view among us who work on this issue and have supported that act back in 98 that there's a great intersection or overlap with U.S. security, with peace in the world, that if you have a country that is repressive and persecutes religious believers, you're going to see a country that is problematic for stability, both in their own country, in their region, and even in their relations with the United States, because religious freedom is such a core value to the United States. that we are seeing that our the success of our democracy, in part, in large part, is because of that first clause of the First Amendment, which is grants us or recognizes in law religious freedom. And this holds true whether you're looking at North Korea, where there is zero religious freedom, and the people are punished in North Korea because they worship as Christians, but they're also punished if they don't worship the dear leader, the Kim family. So you have that model. You have Saudi Arabia, which has freedom for one religion, which essentially means there is no religious freedom because apostates and blasphemers can be put to death there and are punished very severely, and Christians have no ability to worship publicly in Saudi Arabia, even though there's over 1 million Christian foreign workers there. So these are, you know, this is a, one was a radical atheist group, the country that is North Korea. One is a radical Islamic country, and that is Saudi Arabia, and it's Wahhabi interpretation of Islam. And then there's a repression in places in between as well.
What kind of factors, what kind of data does the report actually examine? What particular things does it look for and look at?
Well, it's going to be looking at whether a country allows churches, whether it insists on controlling those churches or other houses of worship, not just churches, but, you know, Tibetan Buddhist temples, for example, in China, or synagogues in the Middle East. So it's going to look to see whether there's allows churches and houses of worship, whether it allows, whether it heavily regulates those, and including determining what the sermons have to be or who the church leaders are who are appointed. And then that's an example that China fails on. It allows churches in China, which was a breakthrough after the Cultural Revolution, but the churches now are heavily, heavily regulated. And if they do not go along with government dogma, and that could be on abortion, it's the government mandates abortion and enforces, you know, it's one child or now two child policy through abortion. So if a church preaches against abortion, it will not be registered. Churches that are not registered can be destroyed, as we've seen recently in Henan province. And a woman was actually, a pastor lost his wife as she was trying to save a church from demolition, and she was crushed by the authorities. So that's one of the things that they're looking at. They're looking at freedom to appoint your leaders, freedom to have education of religion, whether you can transmit your faith to your children, whether you can speak publicly about your faith and what it means and how it's applied, whether you can practice your religion in the public square, whether you can, for example, have a graveyard for a religious group or sing, you know, Christian hymns and be heard at Christmas time by others, whether you can have a cross in your church. In China, again, in Zhejiang province, 1,500 churches have been recently demolished for not being registered with the government, and they have the rest have stopped displaying their crosses because it is so repressive there. And in much of the Muslim world, churches have to hide their crosses. This is what ISIS, and you know, destroyed. They went into Iraq and Syria and immediately started destroying churches and ancient monasteries, destroying crosses. And their slogan, ISIS's own slogan, this is the Islamic extremist terror group that we're fighting in coalition, has a slogan of, we are going to break your crosses.
So who are the, you've mentioned several countries that have kind of garnered the attention of the U.S. State Department with respect to religious freedom. Is there something equivalent to a worst offenders list?
Yes, it's called a Countries of Particular Concern, or CPC. And this is actually in the law that mandates the State Department, the U.S. State Department, to issue this annual report. And by the way, it's an excellent report. It is over 1,000 pages long. It's divided into every country and, you know, country chapters. And you can simply Google Religious Freedom Report, State Department, and it'll pop up, and there's one issued every year. So that legislation that requires the State Department to produce these massive reports with quite a bit of detail on all the religions and how they're treated in each country. It also mandates that the State Department devise a list naming the world's worst persecutors. So the countries that I have mentioned are on that list: the North Korea, China, Saudi Arabia, Iran. These are, you know, some of the countries that are among the worst in the world, Eritrea. So they can have an impact on policy. The United States is required to take some policy measures to register its concern for the treatment of people because of their religious beliefs. And sometimes that can be waived. I think in the case of Saudi Arabia, it's always been waived. But it also could restrict military aid or, you know, some kind of visas for those responsible for the persecution. And that's what we have done on Iran, for example. Those who are the worst persecutors, they and their families, you know, are singled out. They can't get visas to come here as tourists or for other reasons. So that is a useful tool in trying to project America's concern for religious freedom. We're not only concerned for free trade or for defense, but also for religious freedom, because that is a core principle of our own nation. And we are that shining city on the hill for so many persecuted believers around the world.
In terms of movement on religious freedom, let's start with things that have gotten measurably worse. I assume that Turkey would probably be on the list of countries where things are getting worse with respect to religious freedom.
Yeah, Turkey is moving in the wrong direction. It's becoming more intolerant of non-Muslim religions. And they have, just in the past couple months, the government has taken over about 50 churches. And they have, it's uncertain whether the churches will be able to ever get them back. And they have, of course, one of the most famous churches in the world is Hagia Sophia. Saint Sophia was the seat of the church after the Roman Empire fell for about 500 years. That was then taken over when the Islamists took over Constantinople, now Istanbul. They turned it into a mosque for about 500 years, and then it was turned into a museum. And now the government is turning it back into a mosque, it seems. They have, during Ramadan this summer, they had prayers, a call to prayers, and then Muslim prayers inside of it. The Christians are not allowed to worship there now. So it's, and then there was a pastor, an American citizen, Pastor Brunson, who is imprisoned there. He has been a pastor in Turkey. Christian churches are theoretically allowed. They are legally allowed, and they're legal, and he had been there for years, and he was suddenly arrested under false pretexts, and he the U.S. has spoken up to try to, the Trump administration has tried to get him out. The president has personally raised his case, and that is, and they have not responded, which is very worrisome, because Turkey, we should not forget, is a NATO ally.
We're talking with Nina Shea of the Hudson Institute Center for Religious Freedom about State Department's annual report on international religious freedom. When we come back, some bright spots where there's been improvement.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office. 314-416-8117.
I've got some friends down in Houston.
Join Mark and Molly Hemingway, Brian Wolfmiller, Rod Dreher, Jennifer Roback Morse, Scott Murray, and me for the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
And they won't ask me questions.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
What do you believe? What do you say about what you believe? And why exactly does it matter? Learn more about the what and why of the Christian creeds and Lutheran confessions this month in the Lutheran Witness. Get 6 issues of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's premier magazine for only $6.99 when you visit cph.org/trylutheranwitness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. cph.org/trylutheranwitness.
I bet you didn't know that the teaching of Latin in schools is making a comeback. Latin? Really? Isn't that a dead language? Well, take a look at what studies say about how well Latin students do on a test like the SAT. Memoria Press's Latin program will revolutionize your students' vocabulary, knowledge, and their understanding of grammar. And there is no better subject for teaching critical thinking skills. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the State Department's annual report on international religious freedom with Nina Shea, international human rights lawyer for more than 30 years. She's director of the Hudson Institute Center for Religious Freedom. The Making the Case for Religious Liberty is going to be one of the presentations at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston, Texas. Speakers there are going to include Mark and Molly Hemingway, Rod Dreher, Dr. Scott Murray, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. You can learn more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Making the Case, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston. Nina, you have considerable experience, 30 years of experience as a human rights lawyer, so bring some of that to bear, if you would, here and talk about some of the bright spots with respect to religious freedom globally, places where there has been measurable improvement.
Well, it was, of course, a day for jubilation when the Berlin Wall came down and the Soviet Empire fell apart, because all those countries had been terribly repressed, the militantly atheist or communist governments there. And so now in places like Poland and Slovakia and, you know, East Germany, which is now part of Germany, there is religious freedom. You know, much, instead of killing pastors and priests, they are now allowed to operate freely. So that was, you know, very stark change for the better. And, you know, it's been more difficult in the last, well, since, you know, right before 9/11, really, since the 90s, within 10 years of that, you really saw a hardening of Islamic extremism in many parts of the world, in Sudan, and, you know, Saudi Arabia's competition with Iran has spread. Saudi Arabia has very, and I've done about 4 studies on their textbooks, where they have, they direct students in Saudi Arabia, the textbooks published by their own Ministry of Education, to fight and kill Christians and Jews and other Muslims. So that has spread. Saudi Arabia is not only has petrodollars to ship this out and export this around to Muslim communities, but has the standing or the stature from being the custodian of the 2 holiest shrines in Islam. So they have a lot of credibility in Sunni Muslim circles. And we have seen this spread and a greater intolerance in a number of countries for Christians and for other believers.
You had mentioned earlier that Saudi Arabia, often the sanctions, for lack of a better word, or the warnings are waived for them. What's the reasoning behind that?
Well, first it was oil that was a strategic asset. Now we have plenty of oil, and now we seem to have fallen into this pattern that Saudi Arabia is our ally in the Sunni world, and we need it for security reasons. but they have been compared to both the arsonist and the firefighter. They are helpful in catching some extremists, and they are unhelpful in creating extremists. So they do both. And I fear that we're never going to be able to overcome these conflicts, this terror strikes that we're seeing in Iraq and Syria and spreading throughout Europe now, unless the education is changed and the culture is changed.
Why would a state, let's describe a couple in particular, say North Korea or Pakistan, for various reasons, why would they want to restrict religious freedom?
Well, they have different rationales. One thing that you see in common is sort of solidifying the authority or the legitimacy of the ruler through the religious identity or through their belief identity. In North Korea, you don't have religion per se. They have some fake churches, but it's really a Potemkin church. It's for visitors. And Christians, for example, can be imprisoned in concentration camps, in detention camps, for up to 3 generations if they're caught praying or if they have a Bible. And they could be killed, and they could be executed for having a Bible. So they have an ideology in the government, and they get their legitimacy by worshiping, really, the leader, Kim. And in Pakistan, there's constant pressure from extremist groups to become more extreme. And so the government gives into that. And the government has a blasphemy law that is very harsh, that calls for death if anyone ridicules the Islamic prophet Muhammad or the Quran. And that gives a platform to extremists in society. They can then point their finger and say, this person's a blasphemer. And you can't even repeat the alleged blasphemy in a court, because that would be another act of blasphemy. So it's a star chamber, it's a trial that's predetermined. If you're accused of blasphemy, you're pretty much convicted of it, and you can be put to death or put in prison for life. And this allows extremists to determine what can be said, what can be criticized, and what can be reformed. And it's very difficult to get reform when you have that in place.
What kind of impact would you say this annual report has had in the past and is hoped to have on the state of international human rights?
I think it's clarified to the world, to these governments, that the United States does care about the issue of religious freedom, that we are different from Europe. We are a secular government. We're not a religious or a sectarian government, but we do see a place for speaking about religion and its importance in our official business. The report requires our embassies around the world to be in touch with religious believers of all different religions, and that gives comfort and help, can help individuals. We learn about who's being thrown in prison, who's being tortured and killed. It can be an early warning sign, this religious persecution, of extremism rising in a country and a tightening of the whole political area, if we choose to see that sign. But it's that kind of documentation is very, very important to collect for that purpose as well, to see how is the country drifting away from freedom or into a more hostile stance towards us as well, towards radicalism. So there's that. We do have some policies where we feel need to have a démarche or a protest, official protest, of what is happening inside their country regarding religious believers. And so we have a moral component to our foreign policy. We're not just a transactional relationship with these countries. We don't just sign trade deals with them or defense deals with them. We want to see peace within their borders and peace outside their borders. There is a direct link between, you just think of the Nazis or the communists. There's a direct link between totalitarianism, where there's no freedom of belief, and peace. And we're seeing that play out today in both ISIS caliphate in Iraq and Syria, And we're seeing that today in North Korea, which is now firing missiles at us and our allies.
Two quick final questions with respect to ISIS. Would it be fair to describe their actions with respect to their particular enterprise of restricting religious freedom as genocide?
Absolutely. And I've been very much involved in leading a movement to get this designated as genocide, what they're doing, and successfully, both under the Obama administration with Secretary John Kerry designated a genocide, and so has Secretary Rex Tillerson just this month on August 15th designated and officially declared at a press conference with the rollout of this report that ISIS is responsible for genocide against Christians, Yazidis, and Shia groups in its territory. And what we saw with the Christians is that ISIS stormed in, rampaged through all the Christian villages in Nineveh, and left no Christian community intact in its territory. There was no pastor or priest allowed, and the churches were all either shut or destroyed. There was a woman, we're just now with the liberation of Mosul and Nineveh in northern Iraq, we're beginning to fully understand what has happened to these people. Most of them fled, most of the Christians and Yazidis fled to safety, but those who could not get out met very grim fates. There's a Christian woman who's middle-aged who was just found in Mosul, and she was sold to 10 men over 3 years. There was a little girl, Christina, snatched from her mother's lap in 2014. She was 3 years old. She was just found, by the way. She's 6 years old, and she's okay. She's been reunited with her parents just this summer. There was a woman who told about her husband, seeing her husband crucified to the front door of their home because he refused to renounce his faith in Jesus Christ. So these are the kinds of cases. Many, there were 15 men in one group that were forced to convert to Islam to spare a 9-year-old from becoming a jihadi bride, from being raped. It's been a horrible situation. There are many, many churches destroyed. The towns are smashed and leveled. The houses, there are tens of thousands of houses that need to be rebuilt before the Christians can even go home. They're living in camps. They've been living in shipping containers for the last 3 years in camps up in Kurdistan. And they need to go home. And this is another example of how religious freedom intersects with national security. Iran is colonizing and moving into their areas, into this Iraqi northern area, and it's very much a concern for the U.S. right now. And so I think it's imperative for all our sakes that these Christians be allowed to go home, be able to go home, and be empowered to go home and rebuild. And, this is the cradle of Christianity. Christians belong in the Middle East, and they should not be forced to flee to the West for safety.
Finally, then, with respect to the state of affairs in the United States, has the U.S. State Department offered any clarification on President Trump's so-called Muslim ban when it comes to applicants for immigration?
Not really. The ban was created under the Obama administration, a list of countries where there were many terrorists, and it was a temporary suspension. It's in the courts now. There is extreme vetting. It was largely the rollout of that created the uproar because it was done in a very rushed way, so people were turned away at the borders. Certainly, we should always have a refugee policy, and we should allow in those who are persecuted for their faith. And I believe that those who are suffering genocide for their faith, as the Christians and Yazidis of Iraq are, should be at the front of the line for refugee status in the United States. And that was bitterly opposed by the president's opponents, that we should not prioritize Christians. I don't think we should only prioritize Christians, and I don't think we should prioritize them because they're Christian, but because they are victims of genocide by ISIS. So that would include the Yazidis and others. But this is something that we have solemnly vowed after the Jewish Holocaust 70 years ago, that never again would we be passive in the face of genocide. And unfortunately, we are not fulfilling that promise. because we are not getting our aid to those Christian communities, and they are not able to rebuild, and we need to change that.
Nina Shea is an international human rights lawyer for more than 30 years and director of the Hudson Institute's Center for Religious Freedom. You'll find a link to the Hudson Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Nina, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Tom.
When we come back, we're going to be teaching a Sunday school lesson with Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel. We'll be in 1 Kings chapter 3, talking about the wisdom of Solomon.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
The third and final book in the premier novel series for Christian women is out. The latest in the Anthems of Zion series is titled The Harvest Rays. It's written by Issues Etc. regular guest Katie Schuerman. Learn more about The Harvest Rays at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Harvest Rays, the Issues Etc. book of the month for August, 1-800-325-3040.
No gimmicks, no shticks, just straightforward preaching and teaching in accord with Scripture and the Lutheran confessions. By the book liturgy, right from the hymnal. No glitz, just Christ crucified for sinners like us. We're Grace Lutheran Church in Racine, Wisconsin. Come receive God's gifts with us. Find out more about us at Grace Lutheran Racine, that's all one word, .net. And like you, we're proud supporters of Issues Etc.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Common and experienced firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors, coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the Word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one's study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to help them to get a sense of, A, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then, B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.